Hello, welcome to today's broadcast, which is for Sunday the 7th of June, and we're continuing our series called The Wonder Women of Power. We're on the fifth woman now, and we're going to be talking about Ruth. But before we do that, let us do our little Quizlet thing that I like very much. Okay, so I am thinking of an item. And you will get 5 points, 4 points, 3 points, 2 points, and 1 point as the clues get easier. So I hope that makes sense if you're hearing this for the first time. Okay, so the item I am thinking of for 5 points, it is something you can use to carry things. What could that be? For 4 points, it can be made of different materials. Does that help? For 3 points, it can have holes in it. Different size holes, big ones or small holes in it. For 2 points, you can attach this to a bicycle. What could that be? Right, for 1 point, because this is very, very easy now. When he was a baby, Moses was hidden in this. Does that let you know what it is? Did you guess? If you guessed I was thinking of a basket, you're correct. Well done. That was just for fun. Right, so today we're talking about Ruth. I love the story of Ruth. Apart from the fact that it's only 4 chapters of the Bible, it is one of 2 books that are written about women. I wonder whether you know what the other book is. A minute to think about, or not even a minute, seconds to think about it before I give you the answer. The other book is Esther, which is amazing. Esther is also known for being the book that God is not mentioned in the book of Esther. It's an amazing story, but God or Yahweh or Jehovah is not mentioned in that book at all, which is great. But today we're talking about Ruth. So I've got 2 lessons to point out from the book of Ruth. So in chapter 1, we meet a guy called Elimelech who lives in Bethlehem with his family, with his wife, Naomi, and they've got 2 children, Mahlon and Chilion. Right. And they decide, Elimelech decides to leave Bethlehem and go to the country of Moab. Now, this was not a good idea because Bethlehem was well known for being the place where God lived. You know, the Ark of the Covenant was there. That's where people went to worship God. But Elimelech decided to leave and to go to a place of Moab. Now, Moab was one of the places that God said, do not have anything to do with the people of Moab. They do not worship me. They worship idols. And it's not good for you, for your children, to mix with the people of Moab and to take sort of wives from there and for your girls to be married by the men of Moab. But Elimelech, for whatever reason, decided to take his family to live in the country of Moab. I mean, that can show us that even in life, people that might be good or have good intentions sometimes make stupid decisions, because this was really right up there. Anyway, so he decides to go over. They live in Moab. His children grow up. Before they do, Elimelech dies. Okay, and in the Bible, death is sort of you know, especially untimely death, the death of when you're a young age or whatever, it's not a really a great thing to die early, because it sort of shows that God's favor is not with you. So Elimelech dies, leaving Ruth with her 2 sons, and her 2 sons make the decision to take wives from the women of Moab. Okay, again, not a great idea, but there we are. So one of the girls was called Orpah, and the other was called Ruth. Now, these two girls seem to have been quite good girls that we'll see later on. And they lived with their mother-in-law and the two sons for about 10 years. Now, again, another little sign that things were not quite right here. They didn't have any children. You know, 10 years, that's quite a long time to go without not having children. So, again, a little bit of a sign that God really wasn't favoring them, wasn't really showing them good things, were not really coming out of all of these decisions that were being made by this family. And then, unfortunately, Malin and Chilion also die. So now Naomi is left with her two daughters-in-law, Orpah and Ruth. And, you know, and that's it. Now, it wasn't great for a woman to be a widow and live by herself, especially not with two women, because usually it was the men that did a lot of the work and went and got food for the family. So Ruth and Orpah would not be expected to go out there to work. And Naomi, obviously, is not getting any younger. And, you know, she doesn't really have anything to offer and she can't really work. So, you know, it would have been difficult for the family to have an income of any description at this stage. Another slight reason to show that God's really not smiling on them at the moment. And then Naomi decides she's going to go back to Bethlehem because she hears that God was blessing people in Bethlehem. Surprise, surprise, not. So she decides she's going to go back where she was, you know, back home, really. So she says to Naomi, she says to Ruth and Orpah, right, girls, I really think it's a good idea for you to go back to your parents. I haven't got anything I can offer you. And things are not going well for me and my family. So I think it's a good idea for you to go back. And if we pick it up from verse 11 in chapter 1. Let's go back to verse 9. Not even then. Verse 8. So Naomi says to her two daughters-in-law, go back, each of you, to your mother's house. May God show you kindness, as you have shown kindness to your dead husbands and to me. And may God grant that you will find rest in the home of another husband. You know, and she's really encouraging them that, look, I've got nothing that I can give you. It's better for you to go back home and try again and start from fresh. Try and find another husband. And, you know, and I'm giving you the blessing. I'm blessing you and I'm telling you this is okay. This is what I want you to do. I want you to go and go back to worshiping idols. Go back to forget about the faith that, you know, that you saw me and my husband's and your husband's practicing in this house. Go back to worshiping idols. Go back to your friends. Go back to your old life. Go back to how things used to be for you. And hopefully God will bless you in that and you will find joy in another house with another husband. So she kisses them and they all weep because, you know, Orpah and Ruth must have loved Naomi and they've all gone through a hard time together. So they've all supported each other through all these things, Naomi with her husband dying and then their own husbands dying. So they've been through a lot together. And they don't really want to go. And they say, let us go with you. We want to go with you to your people. But Naomi says, no, my daughters, return home. Why should you come with me? I have nothing more to give you. I don't have any more sons who can be your husbands. Go back home. I'm too old to have another husband. Even if I tonight slept with a man, would you wait for me to have 9 months later to have a child and hope that it's a boy? And if it's a boy, will you wait for that baby to grow up by that time? You know, how old will you be that you'll be getting married to this small little boy? You know, I've got nothing to offer you. I've got nothing more that I could give you. So just return. And really, I can't ask you to stay unmarried for such a long time. You have got your whole lives ahead of you. Just go. Go to your father's house and I hope that things will be well with you. And then they cry and they weep and Orpah says, okay, fine, that's it. I will go. So Orpah goes back home to her family. But Ruth clings to Naomi, it says in verse 14, clings. You know, this is like quite an aggressive thing. It's like, I'm not letting you go. It sort of reminds me of the time when Jacob was running away from Esau, and he has a dream of angels going up and down in heaven, and he wakes up, and then he sees an angel, and he holds on to that angel, and he will not let the angel go. And this is for hours. The Bible says that he wrestled with the angel for hours, and the angel could not free himself from Jacob, because Jacob was holding on like for dear life. And then at that point, that's when God changes Jacob's name to Israel, and he becomes the father of many nations. Wonderful. And this is the same sort of thing. Naomi represents God. He represents the belief and the work of God, the power of God. He represents a new future for Ruth. And Ruth is clinging on here for dear life. So if we read in verse 15 again, Naomi is trying to get rid of her. And she says, look, your sister-in-law has seen sense and has gone back to her people and her gods. Go back with her. But Ruth replies in verse 16, don't urge me to leave you or to turn back from you. Where you go, I will go, and where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people, and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, serious, and there I will be buried. May the Lord deal with me, be it ever so severely, if even death separates from me. So she's like, look, even unto death, I will haunt you. Naomi's getting really militant here. She is like, whatever else is on offer, I choose you. Whatever else anybody else could say to me or try and plead with me, I don't care. I am so sure that being with you is the best thing for me that I'm willing to stake my life on it. Oh my goodness, what a decision. What a commitment. And this is how we should commit when we are giving our lives to God. This is how we should do it. Okay, this is a serious commitment. This is like, look, my shoes, my socks, my hair, my friends, my work, my plans for the future, the length of my nails is like the food I eat, everything about me, I am committing to you. Naomi does like a 160, 180, what is it? 180, 180 degree turn. She was going in one direction. She could have gone back to her family, gone back to her gods, gone back to the old and familiar, gone back to the things that she grew up with, the things that she knew. She would have slipped back into that household. No problem. She was a good girl. She was not lazy. She would have, but she doesn't choose that. She doesn't. She absolutely commits to being with Ruth. And with Naomi. And she says, wherever you go, I will go. And she's really determined. And she sort of says, you know, I have got a choice of whatever else I've got to face in my father's house, maybe my brothers, maybe my father ruling over me, or whatever is out there compared to following and being with you and your God, your people. And even though we have nothing, we have nothing to show for it, because Elimelech would have left home with all his wealth, all his cattle, everything to go to Moab. And now they were returning there with nothing. She says, that is better for me to have nothing with you than to have everything out there with everyone else. And that's what we should do. We should know that. We should know that our faith in God is worth so much more compared to what the world can offer us. We can get so much more joy, so much more happiness, so much more peace, so much more like material things with God compared to what the world has to even try to offer us. So our commitment to God should be complete. We should be willing to go in all in, you know, everything, every area of our lives should be governed and guided by God. So that is how much Ruth believed in Naomi. And I mean, Naomi didn't have anything. She even says, look, if I found a husband now and I slept with the man tonight, are you going to wait the whatever, 15 years, 18 years for that boy to grow up? even if I felt pregnant today, still 9 months ago, you know, all of that. I've got nothing to give you. I cannot make a husband for you. But even with all of that, Ruth is still determined that the nothing she can see with Naomi is worth more to her than all that she can remember about her father's house. How amazing. How amazing is that? That is real, real commitment. So that's one thing that we can learn from Ruth. We can learn full and total commitment when we give our lives to God. And if God is speaking to you and you want to make that decision, speak to one of the adults in your house or give me a call or send an email to youth@sbc-church.org.uk. And just let us know that you've made that decision and that you feel that strongly that God can give you so much more than what the world or anybody else has to offer you. And now we've made that commitment to God. If we make that commitment to God, what do we get out of it? We're going to find that out in the second lesson to learn today. So Ruth and Naomi go back home, and Naomi is all miserable. Naomi is like, I've got nothing. I am nothing. Just call me miserable. I'm just going to sit here and just while away the last days of my life. You know, I've got nothing. Ruth is the complete opposite. Ruth is energized because she's made this complete and complete commitment to Naomi and all of that. She has got bright insight. She's like, we need to work. We need to make money. We need to eat. I am going to go out there and find us something. So she goes out there and she starts gleaning in a field. She doesn't know whose field it is. And she starts picking up, gleaning was one of the laws at that time that if there were poor people or widows or orphans or all of that, they could go behind the shearers in the field. And as they were shearing barley or wheat or whatever, then they could just pick up the leftovers and put them and use them and make money out of them and survive through that. So Ruth goes and she does that from like early morning, and she does it all through the day, and she's noticed. She does a job so well that she stands out, and people are impressed by Ruth, and people know her story, and they're like, this is that girl who's come from Moab. Well, let's see what comes out of Moab. And they're so surprised by her commitment and her love of Naomi. She doesn't forget. Anytime she gets some food, she goes back and she gives Naomi. Anytime she has a little bit, she goes and she shares that little bit with Naomi. And she's productive. She's vigilant. She's hardworking. She respects her mother-in-law. And everybody is really, really impressed with Ruth. Anyway, then Naomi sort of says, okay, Ruth, you've gone and you've met up with Boaz, because Boaz is this really rich guy who has loads of fields. And she says, Boaz is actually related to Elimelech, so he's our relative. Why don't we work it out? I'll, you get all dressed up and go and offer yourself to Boaz as a wife, and then just sit there and wait and see how the man responds. Ooh, well. This is very risky because obviously men are the ones who normally used to go and ask women. But this was a little bit dangerous for Ruth to do, because Boaz could have just taken advantage of her and sort of, you know, slept with her and had his way and done whatever he wanted, and then said, well, actually, I never asked you to come here. That's not how our tradition is. You're not supposed to come to me, so go away. He could have just sent her off, but he doesn't. He actually respects what she does, because he's not a young man. And Ruth, being so hardworking and having such a good relationship, he sort of says to her, you could have done better than me. You know, you might think I'm a good catch, but I'm an old man. And really and truly, you could have gone and, you know, and had anybody you wanted. So I feel very privileged that you offering yourself to me. And he says, but we do have to do things right, and we have to follow the law. So I need to sort this out. So go back to your mother-in-law. He gives her lots of grain and gifts and things that she could take to her mother-in-law. So Ruth comes back to her mother-in-law, and mother-in-law is like, Ruth, is that you? What happened? Tell me all. And Ruth says, yes, I did go to Boaz, and, you know, he did shelter me in the night, but he sent me away with all this great stuff. And he says that he's going to sort it out. And she tells, Ruth tells Naomi everything that Boaz had done. And in verse, chapter 3, we're in now, and in verse 17, he gave me 6 measures of barley, saying, don't go back to your mother-in-law empty-handed. And in verse 18, which is the one we're focusing on now for our second lesson, Naomi says, wait, my daughter-in-law, until you find out what happens, for the man will not rest until the matter is settled today. And for me, this tells me one of the life lessons that we have. As I said, the first part in Ruth chapter 1, verse 16, we see Ruth giving her whole heart to committing to life with Naomi, to everything that Naomi has to offer, even if it's very little. And she knows that that is better than, you know, any other thing that she could have. And here we see the commitment that God can give to us. If we give ourselves completely to God like that, this is what God is going to do. Because Naomi says, wait, because this man, which in our case would be God, is not going to rest until the matter is settled. And that's what we need to do. We need to learn to wait. If we sow our prayers to God, let's say our prayers are like a seed, and we go to God and we say, okay, Lord, I'm praying to you about my future. I'm praying to you about the job I'm going to do when I get older. You go and you dig that up under near the cross of Jesus, and you bury it and you put it under there and you cover it up with sand and you wait. Okay. You water it with prayers of thanksgiving and all of that. And you're waiting for God's answer, which is going to come shooting up there like a tomato seed up in the ground. But you don't. If you don't wait and wait and wait and be patient and wait a week or 2 or 3 months or a year, if you go and dig up that soil to find out where the seed is, nothing will ever grow. And that's what it's like sometimes when we pray about something to God. We should just believe that he's going to take care of it, and he's not going to sleep or slumber until the matter is settled. We should just have the patience to wait and wait and wait. We have to wait and wait and find out until, she says, until you find out what happens. Okay, wait until. Don't wait and don't wait, but wait until you find out what happens. For God will not rest until the matter is settled. God will give you the answer, but you have to wait and wait. Do you get what I mean? You just have to wait. You just have to be patient. Don't go digging up your prayers or taking it out of God's hands and thinking, I will grow this seed myself. I will give myself the answer. Who was that? Abraham did that. God said you will have a child by Sarah, and it'll be all fine. But he was like, no. And Sarah says, well, we've waited long enough. Let's dig up the and give ourselves the answer. Have my maidservant and sleep with her. And that created its own set of problems because that was not the right answer. You have to just wait and wait. And wait some more. And God will deal with the matter. He will not rest until you have your answer. Whether you like your answer or not is another thing. But you just have to wait. You just have to be patient. I won't do that wait thing again anymore. But do you understand what I mean? You just have to wait. God will settle the answer, okay? And that seed will surely grow. And by God's grace, you will have waited patiently, and then you'll be happy with it. So that's one of the things that I want you, you know, the second thing I want you to pick up from Ruth chapter 3, verse 18. When you pray to God and you have done all that you can do, you have to wait until you find out what happens. for God will not rest until the matter is settled. And of course, the matter is settled. Boaz goes and in chapter 4, he's running around. He's working very hard to sort out the matter for Ruth. He wants her issue sorted. He wants her matter dealt with. He wants her, her prayers to be answered. He wants great things to happen for her. So he goes and finds out there's another guy who's entitled to Elimelech's property, because Elimelech's property, it's like an auction. It's a little bit like an auction, but then this guy gets first dibs on the property, and he tells him, right, okay, you can have Elimelech's land. You can buy that. And give Ruth and give Naomi the money. And he says, oh yeah, I'll do that. And then he tells him, but it comes with a price. It comes with a Ruth. And if you take the land, you have to take Ruth into your house as well. And he's like, oh, that's going to cause problems, because my wife is never going to accept that. And any children that are born, they won't have my name. They will have Elimelech's name. So no, I'm not going to have that. It's too much responsibility. I don't want to mess up my household for the sake of that. But Boaz, who's probably a little bit in love with Ruth by now, says, right, great. If you won't have her, if you won't buy the land and have the responsibility of Naomi, I'm more than happy to do that. So he buys the land and has the responsibility of Ruth and Naomi. And it all works out brilliantly for Boaz, because his name now appears in the most important bloodline, the most important family tree, as the father of Obed. And Obed was the father of Jesse, and Jesse was the father of King David. And Jesus came by that bloodline. And of course, we see Ruth's name as one of the four women that are put on the bloodline of Jesus in Matthew chapter 1. And it works out brilliantly. So what a stupid opportunity that guy missed. He could have been on that bloodline. He could have been somebody that was mentioned in the bloodline of Jesus. So I guess that's another lesson we could learn, that, you know, some of these opportunities that we're very quick to miss because it looks like a little bit of hard work, it can really help you. But the two main things I want you to learn: make your commitment to God. If you make your commitment to God, make it with your whole heart. Make it a complete 180 turnaround, where you're like, if it's a choice of God and the whole world, I would rather choose God. I commit to God completely, with my hair, my shoes, my eyes, my feet, my clubs, my football, my tennis, any activities that I do, whether it's hockey, whichever school I'm going to go to for next year, I commit to that. Working hard, you know, I commit to that. I give that to God. Everything that I do, whether it's washing the dishes properly, everything, you know, everything. Basically, you know, the things I say, the things I think, the things I watch on television, the way I talk to other people, all of that, I give all of that to God, because a little bit with God is better than what the whole world could offer me. And then we know that God then does his bit, and he watches over us, and he watches over our prayers. He watches over our future. He watches over our relatives. He watches over our health, our hair color, or the length of it. He watches over all those things until they are settled. He answers our prayers. He looks at how committed we are, and he commits equally, so that the decisions we make, all of that, go into his hand, and they just make a difference to us. They make a great difference, and they help our lives to be better. So I hope that was interesting. I hope that was great. So we are talking, that was the last Wonder Woman of power from the Bible. We've looked at Rebecca and Abigail, Rahab, and we looked at Deborah last week. And now we've looked at Ruth. So we've looked at five Wonder Women of power that can really, really teach us some life lessons. And next week, and for the next 5 weeks, now that we've made this amazing commitment to God, and it's like feet first, all in commitment, I want us to be looking at five lessons that Christians should know. Five things that Christians should know. And if you want to read ahead, we're going to be looking at John chapter 3, verse 16, and John chapter 10, verse 10 in next week's for Sunday, the 14th of June. And then I've got another four lessons of things that we should know. Because we are the Christians, really, and there's some things that we should know how to answer people if they ask us about God's love, if they ask us about committing to God, and ask us what we get out of it. If they ask us the name of the 12 disciples, we should know that. Those are things that I believe that God can can help us to know and to learn from. So I hope you're looking forward to that. Just another little notice, if anybody's missed it, or if you have younger brothers or sisters, that I'm going to be doing a Zoom meeting for kids in year 5 and 6. And that's going to be on the 10th of June. It's a Wednesday at 6 p.m. So if anybody needs the link sent to them, they can either call the church office so that I know to send it to them, or they can send an email. I gave the email address earlier. And not to forget that on Thursday at 7 p.m., we're still doing the in-deep sessions. And currently we're discussing sort of like all current affairs and what the Christian's response should be. So I hope you're blessed and I hope you stay well. Before we go, let's just say a quick prayer. Thank you, O Lord, for all the wonder women of power that we have looked at. Thank you for Ruth and the things we can learn from that. I just pray for anybody who's made that commitment, who's decided that, yes, they would like to commit wholeheartedly to you. And I pray that you guide them towards people that would help them to grow their faith and to grow strong in the love and the knowledge that you can give us. I pray that we take advantage of the amazing things that you are willing to do as we make this commitment, that you are willing to work on our behalf, on our prayers, on our requests, on the things that we lack, that you're willing to work on them until a solution is provided. So help us in our faith and help us to trust in you all the time. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen. Right. See you later. Bye.